Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your Starfinder news, reviews, and interviews podcast. I'm Owen Casey Stevens, your host, and with me today is Alex.
Hi, I'm Alex Agunis. Sorry.
And behind the scenes, keeping us produced and you able to hear us, is Vanessa Hoskins. And today, we are going to be talking to you a little bit about some of the news that came out of PaizoCon. It was a virtual con, for what I believe are obvious reasons, the first virtual PaizoCon, which might deserve its own show, but that won't be this, talking about the format and the moving to the virtual world. And then we're going to talk about the Biohacker, one of the three new classes out of the Character Operations Manual. So, Alex, you had a lot to do with virtual PaizoCon. What do you consider the big Starfinder-related news to come out of it?
I did have a lot to do. I worked behind the scenes trying to help all of the Paizo people get ready so that they would be good to go when the show started. And I watched a bunch of them as a result of that. And I think probably one of the biggest highlights is the fact that they announced the next Starfinder hardcover, which is the one that will come out after Alien Archive 4. It'll be the spring 2021 release, and it is called the Galaxy Exploration Manual.
And what do we know about this gem of a book?
That's funny. We know very little about it, actually. We know that it's a book that kind of wants to be something like Ultimate Campaign and the Game Mastery Guide, but those books in Pathfinder overwhelmingly cater to the GM. And Starfinder has a very long and very well-received tradition of creating products that are for all sides of the table. So GM needs to involve the players in addition to the GM. So we know that there's going to be some stuff that's player facing, and we know there's going to be some stuff that's GM facing. The only thing we've really heard for certain is that the Starfinder lead designer, Joe Pacini, really likes tables. And John Compton assured us that there were plenty of tables in this book.
I would not be surprised to see a whole bunch of tables. Plus, tables are a great way to try and help people to explore a galaxy, right? You can't
Definitely.
Possibly get away with saying, hey, here are 2 million possible worlds. But you could say, here are 5 D100 tables, each telling you one thing about that world, and come up with millions of possibilities.
Absolutely. I think one thing that's really cool about this is that from what we understand, the book's design in some areas was very much inspired by the Deck of Many Worlds. And, you know, we on the show love the Deck of Many Worlds. So I'm really excited to see what GEM ends up looking like.
Awesome. What else got announced?
Well, we got a bit more information on the next Starfinder adventure path. We've had the name Fly Free or Die for a while, but this is the first time the developers have actually sat down and told us more about the adventure path, which often happens at PaizoCon. And the SparkNotes version of the adventure, from a very basic look at it, it almost looks like it's the Starfinder answer to Skull and Shackles, where you play a bunch of people who are kind of like space pirates going off doing space piratey things. But when the adventure was actually like laid out and explained to us by its developer, who is Jason Tondoro, he mentioned actually during PaizoCon, he made a very nice Twitter post about Fly Free or Die, where he explained that rather than being like, you know, literal pirates going around stealing and looting, it's very much a punch up at the bureaucracy style adventure path, where the adventure path apparently begins with the players stealing a starship from a Callistocrat corporation. It is designed in every possible way to be a faceless conglomerate. It is literally called Megacorp. And that idea that the adventure is it's pirates, but it's also like, you know, Rage Against the Machine anti-capitalism adventure, and like that speaks to my soul. So I went from being like not excited for this adventure at all, because being the bad guy, like usually when you're pirates, you're neutral at best, you're usually the bad guy, and that isn't very appealing to me. If I'm playing an adventure, I want to at least have the opportunity or the expectation that I'm going to be doing good in the world I'm playing in. So the idea of playing a pirate game wasn't very interesting to me, just like Skulls and Shackles didn't interest me. But hearing that it's punching up against an evil Callistocratic corporation, I am psyched for this adventure now.
Well, and just from the title, the Fly Free or Die, I would personally get a very Firefly slash Serenity-esque vibe off that title, right? It seems like it could be the lyric right after "You Can't Take the Sky from Me."
Yeah, absolutely. It's got a great name, and I think the knowing now what the premise of the adventure path is, I am really excited for this one. That one comes out after, I believe it's, I want to say it's Devastation Arc, I think is the one it comes out, follows, which is the really high level adventure that is a 3-book adventure path that is the first adventure to go to 20th level in Starfinder. So we had a lot of really exciting stuff coming from Starfinder, and I'm expecting to hear even more at Gen Con. The other thing, this actually wasn't announced at PaizoCon, but it was announced this week that there is a free RPG Day module coming out this year, as there usually is. It was written by Jason Keeley. It is the third installment in the Skittermander crew adventure, and it is called Skitterhome.
That is big news, and I know that those are very popular adventures. I think there are going to be a lot of people that are looking forward to getting back to their fuzzy six-armed friends and seeing what the next chapter of that particular help everyone life story is.
Absolutely. And actually, it's going to be a great time to help everyone because Skitterhome is a fourth level adventure for fourth level Skittermanders instead of the first one, which was two, and I first and the next one, which was second. So the Skittermanders have more adventures under their belts now. And it is an adventure that actually is split into two separate adventures, almost like two separate scenarios. In the first scenario, the Skittermanders are on the Skittermander homeworld of Vesk 3 for a major celebration slash festival that occurs on the Skittermander homeworld, and something goes terribly wrong, and the Skittermanders need to save the day and save the festival. And in the second part, the Skittermanders go underground into a cave and in order to rescue some missing workers, and oh no, there are Stridermanders! So we're going to get to see Skittermanders getting to fight their, I guess, their predators?
I still want to make a Skittermander-specific undead called a Staggermander.
The Staggermander, yeah, absolutely. Every time we talk Skittermanders, that one comes up. I think you should do it. If only we knew anybody with like a third party company that would publish a Staggermander.
Oh, hey, I think you've got a third party company, don't you?
Oh, hey, I think you've got a third party company, don't you?
And then we also heard that there is going to be another class playtest, but we don't know a whole lot about that, do we?
Mm-hmm. We know nothing about it. There's a lot of theories going on around based on comments that were made like in chats and stuff, but it's not like based on those comments, I have theories, but it's not really something that I consider newsworthy because we don't have sources. It's kind of just speculation.
No. You have theories. I want to hear your theories. See, I can't say what my theories are because while I do not know what this project is, I legit don't. I do know things that were talked about when I was an employee at Paizo, and if I guessed anything and I turned out to be right, that would be a violation of my NDA and inappropriate. So I can't even publicly guess, even though I would guess I don't know. But if I did know, that would be a problem. So I really want to hear your guess.
Well, in chat, when somebody mentioned their love for mecha, meaning giant robots that punch people and fight the bad guys, a very well-known mecha advocate who works for Paizo, No Direction's very close associate, Amanda Hammond, made a very coy emoji remark about it, which obviously doesn't tell us anything. But if you were coming out with a big mecha book in the future, I feel like that's something you would want to release at Gen Con because everybody has been asking for mecha since the core rulebook came out. Like mecha, 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 mecha. Everybody wants it. Everybody loves it. And man, oh man, if you were going to have a mecha like, you know, book, it would sure make a lot of sense to have a class that could work with mecha, wouldn't it? Like, because the mechanic can't really do that. You could probably make an AI or something, but if people really like mecha, why not just go big with it? And that's my theory. Some kind of like combatant array class, full base attack bonus. They get a mecha almost like the way that that mechanic gets a drone, but it's like some sort of like crazy power armor that makes you huge or whatever. And that is kind of what my pet theory is. I don't know. Because, you know, Amanda is a wily one. And if anybody was going to lead me down a rabbit hole, it's Amanda Hammond.
Well, and it might not even be a rabbit hole, right? She might be trying to drum up support for having a Delmaco demolition showdown book. And so she'll hint at it every time just so she can unleash Starfinder Kaiju versus Mecha psychic pilot romance destruction venture book, which, mm-hmm. you know, having said that, I like the sound of it, but that doesn't mean it's happening.
So you're saying that by actively speculating and taking Amanda's bait, I might be helping further her plot?
I find everything I do tends to further Amanda's plots. There's no way, there's no point in fighting it. Whatever you do, Amanda's plot will be furthered.
Yeah, Amanda is quite brilliant. If anybody has plots that with a single-minded focus, it is Amanda, and I think that she's probably going to get what she wants sooner or later. It's biding the time, you know what I mean?
So, do you feel like there was anything else really newsworthy coming out of Paizo that was Starfinder-specific?
So I was really happy because John Compton talked a lot about the Gen Con release, which is coming out at the end of next month. It's the Starship Operations Manual. As many people who watch the network know, myself and my fellow No Direction staff member, Vanessa Hoskins, it worked extensively on this book. And during it, we got a bunch of shout outs, and I was really excited to hear about how people were excited about what John Compton was saying about this book. They announced a whole bunch of really neat things that were coming into it. One thing that my name got mentioned for, which I was really excited about, was the squadron rules that I worked on, which I can't say any more about because the book's not out, but it's a thing, and it involves starships that can turn into a bigger robot or a bigger starship. I mean, in my heart, it'll always be a bigger robot, but it's probably not a bigger robot. But I am a kid who grew up on Power Rangers, so machines that become bigger machines is like the most amazing sci-fi thing in the world to me. I'm always gonna be a fan of it.
When I go a half generation older and have Voltron as machines that become bigger machines, so
I mean, Voltron is like the TV bell bottoms of this generation now. It's back. Like, people know it and like they love it. So actually, on our No Direction Discord, one of our fans was talking about how, like, you know, oh, I know there are old Voltrons, but, like, you know, even as a fan of the old one, the new one is just so good. Like, can you? I don't know if it really holds a candle. I mean, and like,
my
I feel
Voltron
like
was 15 vehicles that combined into a giant robot instead of five lions. So I didn't get my reboot. But okay.
So that seems wait. Your Voltron is Vehicle Voltron? Is that what it's called? Vehicle Voltron?
Yeah.
That's great.
All right. Let's move on to the Biohacker.
Oh, absolutely. Let's hack the Biohacker. And this is actually, you know, like the last time we did a comm class, it was really nice because we warped reality and brought Param in for that one. And now our good friend James is not feeling great. And we could really use a Biohacker to help make him feel better because the Biohacker is really good at all manner of medicine and or things that you pump into people's bodies for good or for worse.
Yeah, so it turns out that the pump things into people bodies is too long to fit on a single line as a class title. So we had to go with something simpler.
Yeah. And I think that the Biohacker is really interesting because, like, when you get right down to what it does, it's basically a Starfinder alchemist, but by choosing a completely different name that sounds so much more sci-fi, it really kind of fits the Starfinder, like, mythos, I guess is a good way to put it. A lot of the classes in the core rulebook are very generic words. Like, there's soldier, there's operative, there's envoy. These are just like things, concepts that exist in the real world. And of that initial group, really only the technomancer kinda, and definitely the Solarian stand out as like the unique thing for Starfinder. And then Com comes out and Com's like, we've got three new classes. We're not giving you anything you expect. And so in our last episode, we talked about the Witch Warper, which is the new spellcasting class. And now in this episode, we're talking the Biohacker, which is a skills-focused class.
So give me your initial thoughts on the Biohacker.
Well, when I first heard that the Biohacker was a class, I thought it was going to be a shapeshifter. Because to me, bio means life, and hacker means somebody who breaks into the code and changes anything. And the code of life is DNA, so clearly it's a shapeshifter. I was wrong. I was very wrong on what the Biohacker is. The Biohacker is a expert class, but so it's got a ton of skills. And it's pretty neat because of the three expert classes the four expert classes that exist in the game, including it, it's actually the only one that gets to choose what its key ability score is. And it's only one of two classes in Starfinder that actually get to make that choice, the other being the soldier. The biohacker has a number of 6 skills baseline, and they get a lot of benefits that modify that, like their starting proficiencies and their skills based on, you know, what kind of biohacker they are. Are you somebody who studied really hard to become a doctor, or do you just find whatever you found on the ground, mix it together, and slap it in somebody's body and hope it works? And those two create very small changes that end up feeling very different in play. And I think that the class really benefits from that separation that it creates, even more so than the soldier.
More so than the soldier? Because the soldier has a very core question of whether you're really going to be melee or you're going to be ranged. And that's a huge difference. Whereas both kinds of biohacker are largely doing the same kinds of things in combat.
I agree. But I think that because the biohacker's differences are smaller, where they're different is starker. Because like with the soldier, it's like, oh, look, that guy has an axe. You know, oh, look, that guy has a gun. They are different soldiers that specialize in different things. You can't really look at a biohacker and figure out whether they're intuitive or studious just by looking at them. And most of the things they do are pretty much the same. But when you start pulling out the differences, that's where the biohackers become like really clear cut different from each other. Like a good example is that if you are a studious biohacker, if you're intelligence based, you have the ability to take a ton of skills that are like wisdom focused and make them intelligence focused. And because you have a high intelligence, you have a ton of skill points and you're just generally really good at a large variety of things. You get a bonus to will saves because you're so smart. You can like logic your way through problems. And that's really cool. And if you go to the intuitive biohacker, the wisdom focused one, the intuitive biohacker is going to have a high will save too, but theirs is because their wisdom is so high. And so chances are the intuitive biohacker is probably going to have a will that is a little bit higher than the other biohacker, despite the other one getting that bonus. The intuitive biohacker gets 2 bonus skill ranks at every level, but they have to be assigned to a specific skill, and those skills get added to the list of class skills, and they get an insight bonus to those skills. The studious biohacker gets an insight bonus, but they get it to more skills than the studious biohacker, but their list is very specific. It's very sciency and doctory. Whereas, you know, you could be like Shivi in Stellar, where Shivi, one of his 2 skills that he picked for studious biohacker is piloting. So like he's a biohacker who's really good at flying a spaceship, honestly, as good as a mechanic of his level. And it sort of creates this space where the biohackers can be very different, where despite having mostly everything else the same. And I think that sometimes when you have those smaller differences, they're more noticeable, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. It's just not a take I had heard before, which I find fascinating. So
I feel like you say that a lot about my takes.
And it has an ability called biohacks, which sounds a little bit like marking your class with exactly what is on the tin.
Yes.
When we were doing the original playtest version, we basically had used biohacks as being like sort of like a spell resource, right? You've got a certain mm-hmm. number that you can do per day, and they can have different levels of impact. And mm-hmm. a lot of people actively disliked that this thing, this biohack that your class is named for, isn't something you can do all the time. And my memory is you had some pretty strong thoughts about that in the playtest version.
I did. So in the original version, if I recall, it's been a while and I've been playing with the new one so much and I love the new one so much that like my brain isn't there 100%. But in the original one, it was almost like a resource like alchemist bombs, right? And where like you had like a set number, it was based off your key score. You got more as you leveled up. And I think that one of the things that was tricky about that is in a game like Pathfinder, the math is very... the polite word would be mutable. It is very easy to get the bonuses that you want to make your limited resource as effective as possible, because a limited resource that fails terribly and doesn't get anything good out of it doesn't feel as good, especially when you compare to a class like the soldier or the Solarian, where the thing that they're good at is hitting people really hard and you never run out of sword thrusts. So a biohacker, to a certain extent, if they're going to have this cool thing that is going to be what they do, it either needs to be really powerful and work pretty well when you use it, or it needs to be something that maybe isn't quite so powerful, but you get to do it a lot. And it's something that is like your defining thing. It's like how it would be like if an operative's trick attack had a limited number of uses per day. It doesn't feel good, especially since, you know, the operative can put conditions on people all day, every day with debilitating injury. You know, they don't need to track like three, like dex plus three or whatever. Like, and the biohacker kind of did. So I think that moving it away from that system, even if it meant lowering the power of some of them, the point where you're just always able to synthesize some crazy serum out of nothing and shoot people with it. And then when you rest, you get a lot of the ones that are limited use, you get them back. It kind of makes you feel good. And it makes it feel like your character is like actively trying to make use of their abilities. And also it kind of plays to the idea that Starfinder is in many ways representative of a post-scarcity society. I wouldn't expect it to be very difficult to regain material regions, especially ones that didn't cost me anything to get in the first place. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. Well, and that's where the minor biohack came from. Mm-hmm. And, like the minor inhibitor just puts the penalty, the target penalty to attack rolls for a number of rounds, although a decent number of rounds. But you can do that all you want, and you can tack it on to other kinds of attacks. So that gave them a function that was useful in combat that they could unleash all the time.
Yeah, definitely. And it's really cool. A lot of them are... It's the kind of thing where, like, if you're only putting a -1 penalty on somebody, it doesn't feel so bad if you could just do it for free whenever you want. Because that the point where it becomes free is where it feels good. It's like, oh, well, that's the benefit of me shooting them. They just get that -1 penalty to attack roll. Enjoy your life. It's also really nice because the operative right out of the gate is really good at making people flat-footed, right? The biohacker doesn't really have flat-footed capabilities without specific, if I remember recalling correctly, a specific field of study does that. But... it doesn't. It's better like right out the gate at will hitting attack rolls. So like eventually you can get to the point where if you have an operative and a biohacker in the party, the operative's like, all right, I'll make them flat-footed, and the biohacker's like, all right, when they're flat-footed, I'll shoot them and lower their attack penalty. And so it kind of lets the two of them synergize the way that having two operatives in the party would synergize, which I think is another thing that's important. When you're looking at the biohacker in many ways has to be able to do its own thing in a way that it doesn't overshadow the envoy, the operative or the mechanic, but it also needs to be good enough that it can keep up with those classes. And that's very tricky because there is a, I don't necessarily think that it's accurate, but there is a perception in the community that the biohacker is very, very, very strong, maybe stronger than other skill-based classes. And so even if that isn't the case to the average gamer, if that's the perception, then the class needs to look enticing enough on its own. Even if it's not more powerful, it needs to give that impression of power. Does that make sense?
Well, I mean, you need for any class, you need both to be able to say, what about this appeals to me as a player? What are the things that I'm going to be doing, not just in combat, right? In social situations or in exploration situations. What are the abilities it gives me to interact with the game universe that I find appealing? And
yeah, definitely.
What is that going to look like when we are with other characters? Because Starfinder is very specifically designed to be a game with multiple players, right?
Yeah.
We don't, there's nothing stopping someone from having a single character player Starfinder experience if they want, but it's a game about teamwork. So when designing all of these classes, you really have to ask yourself the question, what does it look like when you are having just one biohacker? What does it look like if two people want to play biohackers? Can you have two biohackers be sufficiently different that they feel different in play, that they give you different options?
Mm-hmm.
And absolutely. Of course, we try really hard with Starfinder, tried past tense since I'm not at Paizo anymore. We tried really hard to make sure that any combination of characters was a valid build. Right. Mm-hmm. I carefully play tested groups of four soldiers before we released the core rulebook to make sure you could have a four soldier group and have that be a viable option to go through the game. And there are a lot of things that make that easier in Starfinder than it is in Pathfinder. The fact that flight becomes available easier and earlier, the fact that ranged attacks can be ubiquitous at first level. But I would want, if what excited players was, hey, I really want a biohacker, a vanguard, an envoy, and a mechanic who's an AI mechanic, right? I would really want that to be a viable build with no one who's a primary spellcaster and no one who's a full base attack bonus fighter, and still be able to work together to get things done. So that ability to buff debuff, those status effects that you can stack together working together, I think is an important part of exploring how these classes work in the game.
Absolutely. I definitely agree with that.
Another huge change between the playtest and the final version of the Biohacker was that originally, if you wanted to boost an ally and they were not adjacent to you, you had to successfully hit their armor class. I know, because I was there, that there was a long discussion about that before we put it out, and we ended up putting it out that way for the playtest to get the feedback from people, right? Mm-hmm. The idea from the design standpoint was, okay, what we're essentially saying is you have a range touch ability that you can try and use at greater range, but there's a risk. And what the community heard was you have a ranged buff that might fail and use some of your precious resources and your action was wasted and you didn't help anyone and the Miskatonic and the Envoy don't have that drawback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah.
I played the Envoy as written in the playtest until the book was released in Stellar. You can hear me miss the biohacks a few times. Felt bad. Felt real bad. Although, honestly, the best feeling in the world was coming back to Stellar after the COM came out and going to Vanessa, "Oh, Vanessa, haven't you heard? In COM, I no longer have to roll to hit my friends with my biohacks. I have homing needles now." And I don't even know if I make that exact comment during the show, but it definitely happened at least off screen. Definitely happened at least off screen.
One of the problems that we had from that from a design point of view was once the game mechanical decision is made, because this is a role-playing game, the word game is in there. Once the game decision is made that people aren't having fun with a chance to miss at range, mm-hmm. how do we fix that and still have it make sense within the game, right? Like literally one of the possibilities was just say, okay, boosters are range touch. That's it. They're range touch. You mm-hmm. can't do them at range. But that was such a significant downgrade of biohacker power because the biohacker isn't designed to be on the front line, right? You don't want the biohacker mm-hmm. to have to be standing between the Solarian and the soldier to help them out in combat. The biohacker will get pasted. So then you say, okay, we've got to have some sort of justification, some thin veil of logic as to why my biohacker can shoot the solar armored Solarian Vesk in powered armor with the highest AC in the game automatically, but will still miss when they shoot an enemy that is the exact same build.
And well, I think the custom micro lab, go ahead.
And that's where we came up with the idea of the custom micro lab and having it be limited to a specific number of creatures. It only takes 24 hours and it takes 10 minutes. So you're not going to be doing it with someone you just met. It changed the flavor of those abilities to be something that was very much team focused.
Yes. And it's great because now it means that I have my digital data of all my friends in Sheevy's handy little custom lab. And now when I shoot people, it's got little homing needles. It's great. Wonderful. My favorite.
It also gives you that role-playing opportunity, right? As the biohacker, you're like, well, I'm happy to go adventuring with you, but I'm going to need a hair sample and a blood sample, and I'm going to have to hold this thing up to your shoulder for 10 minutes as it goes, whoa, 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 and I scan you, because in combat, I'm going to need to know where you are, and I will have focused on your heartbeat and your exact heat temperature, and I've got a pheromone sensor, and with these fine-tune, and that's a great role-playing opportunity. That's a great chance for people to look at the biohackers. What is wrong with you? Get away from me. I don't want to give you a hair. I'm a Vesk. I don't have hair. Well, in that case, we'll need a scale sample or a nail clipping.
I'm going to need you to sign this release form and then this consent form in order to receive biohacking services, please.
there's a third-party class called the Bizlock, which is the business-based spellcaster. And you just made me think if you had a Ron Lundeen class that was the star lawyer who was able to whip out contracts that you would sign. I'm happy to give you a +2 bonus to your attack roll, but you're going to have to sign this contract saying that you will not use it on widows, orphans, or people that haven't attacked you.
We should get Ron Lundeen to write that. I bet he would.
And Robin writes so much stuff, right? It's like, I mean, I've literally gone to bed and woken up the next morning. He's like, I wrote a solo adventure for D&D. You want to see it?
He is a very gifted man. It's true.
Don't you have like a life and a family and things that take your time away from this? No, I mean, you do. And he's great at those things too, but he produces a spectacular amount of stuff.
Indeed. You might even say that he has a spark of ingenuity, sort of like our class.
So talk about the spark of ingenuity, since you have managed to shoehorn that transition into the conversation.
Absolutely. So in addition to having biohacks, the biohacker has like a really cool list of class features. And one of them you get at third level is called Spark of Ingenuity. And this was also a bit of a point of contention in the original playtest because, man, oh, man, did people get really upset about the Studious Biohacker's original one. What was published is that once per day, you can alter a biohack to give it other special abilities. And how it works right now is that if you're a Studious Biohacker, you expend two uses of a biohack to combine two basic or minor biohacks into a single one. It doesn't take any extra time, and your person that gets put under gets affected by both. If they have durations, each effect ends after its normal time. The flip side of that one is the instinctive biohacker's ability, which lets them remove specific conditions if it's a booster, or add specific conditions if it is a inhibitor. And it's basically, when the original one happened, the point was that you could basically take your most powerful abilities and mix them together and basically save on the action economy with Studious Biohacker. Whereas the instinctive ones was like a lot smaller. I think it was just like you get dazzled, like, or something really, really tiny. And a lot of people were going, why would I ever play an instinctive biohacker when I could just have a once per day better action economy? I think this version is a little bit more balanced than what was originally published. Do you want to talk about that, Owen?
Well, I mean, balance is tricky, right? Especially when you're talking about conditions and action economy. It can be very, very difficult to, as a designer, sit down and say, okay, clearly the ability to do A and B in one action is worth twice as much as the ability to do just A. But if I can do B and C, but B and C are both less useful than A, is that as good? Is it not as good? So this is one of the reasons why Paizo classically playtests its classes, right? The class is the way that the player is going to interact with the world the most. And there is no amount of theory crafting and no amount of 10 people sitting down and bouncing dice and doing the 5 builds we have time for that can get you as much feedback as several thousand people doing every crazy thing they can think of. And in some cases, bless their hearts, actively looking for ways to break either the wording of the rules or combinations of the rules. And so you get a combination of things like saying, this thing that you thought was going to be really useful, no one cares about. It kind of doesn't matter at that point if that thing is mathematically useful, because again, it's a game. And if no one will choose an option in a game, it's a bad option. Even if you're sitting there going, no, reducing your opponent's attack chance against you by 5% for free all the time is just, it's saving you damage. And it's like, okay, fine. But if everyone hates it, that doesn't matter. We got a lot of feedback, and that is what caused us to rebalance these. And we wanted, again, to make sure that that distinction you were talking about between the Studious and the Instinctive came out in play, that they had different sets of options that resulted in doing different kinds of things. Mm-hmm.
I think that it's interesting because something like saving action economy is like, it makes you feel really good when your biohacks are mixed together and you're delivering that one super biohack. And then you get to go, and it's really only just for like a couple rounds. Like, it's like for 3 rounds, you have 2 conditions. Enjoy. I only had to use 1 standard action to make this happen to you. And like, that is really cool. It's very different. And I think that what probably the original issue was is like when you're talking about a numbers game, well, Starfinder has a lot of numbers, and so sometimes a number doesn't feel special if it's not very big. So Especially a minus one, as useful as a minus one is, it doesn't feel impressive, unless, because the average player isn't like a game designer. They're not going to sit down and chart every single event that happened in a combat round for an entire combat and then mathematically show how much damage was prevented over that spread. I know you've done this, Owen. Don't shake your head.
Here's the funny thing. I literally haven't, but before I was a game designer, before I had a single thing published, I gamed with people, just other gamers who did do exactly that, who kept track of every attack roll and every damage check, and mm-hmm. and could say, okay, look, this 10% change meant that this hit and this missed and this missed and this missed, and that 10% change is why we won this fight, as unimpressive as that is. And that was back, you know, in first and second edition D&D, where the numbers could range the heck over the place. You have no idea at a given level what the value of plus one or minus one is. The advantage of Starfinder's math being, I will say, more standardized is that you know a minus one remains relevant at every level. There should never be a moment where someone can only miss you by rolling a one. So there's always that chance that you have made a difference. Of course, that difference also depends on how long a fight lasts. And that is one of the things that can be very difficult to determine when playtesting a game from the beginning. On average, how long do people take? And a lot of that has to do with play style, how much people take cover, how many people have decided to build a Android rage machine with a chainsword that leaps right in someone's face, because we can suck down a lot of damage that way. We can also do a lot of damage that sort of build, which tends to make fights shorter and bloodier and nastier and perhaps more dangerous.
I know for me, when I first started playing this game in 3.5, I wanted to play a half vampire bard in a game, and I got laughed out of the table. Like, oh, bards are terrible, you know, why would you want to play a bard? They don't do anything. And so, like, I built my bard. And I sat down and I was like, okay, well, let's do a combat round. And so I tracked every single attack everybody did. And I showed every single time that that someone hit because of my song. And I was like, all right, I think that it's fair that because this is a side of the die, I get 5% of your damage. So that this is my damage now. And by the way, every one of your attacks that hit, I have a plus two. So that's 2%. That's my damage. And so I was like, look at my nice pile of damage that wouldn't have happened if I wasn't singing this song. And then people started letting me play bards at tables. It was great. but like, I get that, because, like, you know, it's so funny, because math is hard for a lot of people to, like, wrap their heads around, like, what a math change will do. And I think that's what sort of happens with the intuitive biohacker. But at the same time, like, something like, I get to put two of these things and break the other rule and do the both at the same time, even if it's only for three rounds once per day, it feels really cool. Even though the studious biohackers is, like, pretty much, like, all day, every day, like, you know, it's good. It's not all day, every day, but it lasts so much longer. It's got such a wider spread. It's not putting all your eggs in one basket.
Well, and another thing that you've got to look at when you're talking about things like how much my bonuses change a fight is, did everyone remember their bonus? Because the more complex, the more fiddly, the more little changes a class or an ability has, the more likely it is that it just gets forgotten.
I've been guilty of that.
Well, and when you're a designer, right, you can say, no, look, every time someone on the first round hits an opponent that no one else has targeted before, while no one else is within 30 feet of them, and their attack roll is an odd number, you get them to do double damage. That's on average. And then people are like, no, that's no one is ever going to remember that. So there's this place where you're like, okay, sometimes you just need to tell someone you can do this thing. You don't need anyone else. You can. It's one of the reasons, for example, that some of the envoy abilities can be, hey, you can give someone else this bonus, or you can get this bonus, or you can give yourself this bonus and shoot someone, so that you as the envoy can go, you know what, I don't have to depend on anyone else. I don't have to have people remember what I'm doing. I can just boost myself and attack.
Definitely. 100% agree.
That's sort of the frame of the biohacker, as is the norm with most Starfinder classes. And by most, I think I mean everything except the Mystic. The biohacker has a number of easily swapped out and expanded options. Very specifically, they've got fields of study. And rather than just getting one field of study, they have up to what, three fields of study? Which means that you can, pick up these major powers as you go. And they also have theorems, which are their version of the every other level selectable power that, that gives you new options.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I thought was really interesting is that Calm introduced three new classes, and none of them used a paradigm like the Mystic or the Technomancer, like where like the Technomancer gets like magic hacks at like, what is it? It's like first level and then second and then every four thereafter or something like that. Mm-hmm. Where like they're, and then the Mystic gets like one big connection and then connection powers at like odd levels. Like the all the new classes use the same build style as the Soldier, the Operative, the Envoy. Is that just because it's easier to build archetypes for those classes, you think?
Well, I mean, it, at this point, when you're designing a class for Starfinder, you know what levels the archetype swaps are at. That's set. Mm-hmm. So you want to make sure there is something at that level that the class can give up without the class feeling like it is a lesser version of itself. And Calm also did a lot of stuff with archetypes, which we might talk about at some point. But also, things that people tend to like about Paizo RPGs in general is customization, the ability to have two soldiers be really, really different, or to have two operatives be really, really different. And there are a number of different ways to do that, but it, it is absolutely true that the core design, that the chassis, if you will, of the Biohacker, for example, is very similar to the core chassis of the Operative. Here are some basic powers that you all get. Here are some broad specializations that you can pick up more than one of that, that give you power bonuses at various levels and are thematic, that say something about the attitude and training of your character. And then here's something you can get every other level that will give you a smaller, specific, focused bonus. That turns out to be a really strong design build for these game systems, and it turns out to be very popular with players. There are people that aren't particularly happy with Mystics because Mystics basically make one class choice, and then the rest of it is spell selection. Now, spell selection is important, but every spellcaster has spell selection. So a Mystic looks over at the Technomancer, who gets to choose magic hacks every few levels, and feels bad that their Mystic connection has locked them into one set of abilities. And again, the Character Operation Manual has changed that some, for exactly the same reason that these classes ended up with some similar chassis on how they were put together. And that's another reason why we wanted to do a playtest, right? Like in 4th edition, D&D class had a very, very similar chassis. You had a certain number of daily powers and at-will powers and encounter powers, and they swapped up as you went, and then you had your specialty that you got at a 10th or 11th level or whatever, and so on. And one of the objections that people had to that game system, one of the common ones, was all the classes feel the same. Even though they are all picking different powers, the fact that they all have the same basic progression of powers, the wizard being a little different, makes my rogue and their fighter and their cleric all feel really super similar. And we didn't want people to have that feeling for the new classes with the Character Operation Manual. We wanted everyone to feel like every class had a framework that made sense for that class and let you make a character without it being too complicated. We didn't want, you know, in Pathfinder First Edition, there are people that are trying to map out, okay, how many traits am I going to get? What are my feats going up for 20 levels? And I want to switch to, I got to take this feat and then that trait so I can pick up this archetype so that in two more levels I can pick up this other archetype. And that's just too complicated. So there's this middle ground we were searching for. I think there's a reason that the Calm classes all came down pretty close to it. Although, for example, the Vanguard has a much stronger core power with lesser changes as you go along. The Witchwarper's core power is really a variation of what they can do with spells, and that was necessary for spell balance purpose, since we wanted them to use the same spells as the Technomancer and the Mystic. Mm-hmm. And a lot of their selection options are new options that fill that same niche. But I'm going to be fascinated to see what this new class is like, whether the designers that have gone on are going to look back and say, hey, the Biohacker, Envoy, Mechanic, Operative, Soldier, Vanguard Witchwarper build is a particularly strong way to design and lay out these classes as a framework, or if they're going to go, hey, we've got something really totally wild and different that we want to try, which again is a good reason for them to have a playtest.
Absolutely. So what's your favorite field of study? We haven't really talked much about those. It's sort of like the thing your biohacker is the most good at. It's like what it's like their thesis statement.
Well, and the thing that I like most about the fields of study, all of them, is the fact that there's a power called breakthrough. Just whatever it is, the fact that there is a breakthrough that you have that is something that you've got and very clearly most other people don't. You have this breakthrough that you've developed, and that gets more powerful as you go along. So, I mean, I hammered on the character operation manual development of these quite a bit, and there was some really strong work in the core design that Jason Keeley did. So I like the very sound and the feel of them. I like how much it impacts your character build when you say, hey, I'm a biohacker, but my field is toxicology. That word, that expression, gives people a sense of what your character can do than other people can. All of that said, I think my favorite of them is neurochemistry. Ooh. I think neurochemistry is just idea-wise fascinating. And I think that it has a particularly interesting breakthrough that is going to be most useful in a limited set of circumstances. But when you want it, wow, do you want it?
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense.
And specifically, its breakthrough for people that haven't memorized the entire game is to boost neurotransmitters. That causes a surge of cognitive activity that gives targets a +4 enhancement bonus to saving throws against mind-affecting effects for 1 minute. And that 1 minute time frame is, and if they're already subject to a mind-affecting effect, they can attempt to do saving throw immediately, as long as the original effect had one. So that does two great things, in my opinion. First of all, if you know, because you've already faced a particular bad guy or a group of bad guys, they've got mind-affecting effects, you can say, okay, we don't want the soldier to start shooting us again this time. I will boost his neurotransmitters, and then we'll break down the door and go attack them. Mm-hmm. But the other thing it does, which is to me super iconic for the genre, is that your neurochemistry biohacker is the one that when someone is under the effect of some mind-affecting power, people turn to them and say, hey, can't you do something? And instead of just saying, well, I slapped them and I hope the GM accepts that that is enough of a change that maybe we get a saving throw. No, I've got a set power. Okay, this person is under this mind-affecting effect so that they think that we are all horrible fungus people that are trying to eat them. I inject him with this power. He gets a new saving throw with a bonus. And if that doesn't work, then I'll do it again.
Nice.
So it's situational. It doesn't do you any good if there aren't mind-affecting effects on the field. And therefore, I think if you're going to build a neurochemistry character, you want to, and the other things they do, right, with boostering, they can ignore confused and staggered conditions. That and your inhibitor causes creatures to take a penalty to will saving throws, and that mostly doesn't do you as the biohacker a whole lot of good. But a neurochemistry biohacker is both your mind-affecting mystic's best friend, right? Because an inhibitor imparting a -2 penalty to will saving throws is a huge opportunity to be more likely to affect people and have them fail their saves. And when the enemy is a mind-affecting character, they are your best friend. And I really like that niche, especially since even if it doesn't come up, you as a biohacker have not given up all your other abilities, your normal boosters, your basics inhibitors. You can take other theorems and such to build around it. But I think it's a very strong conceptual niche, and I think it feels a lot like what we see frequently in stories.
Totally, totally. I think my favorite is toxology. honestly, out of the core ones. I think the booster's effect of like you boost a living creature and now it has this gross sweat that when somebody attacks you with a natural weapon, it's so foul that it gets on you that it just penalizes your attacks. And it's so good that like it even goes through armor protections if that person's hit you once, which is like, wow, that's really cool. Their breakthrough is called Suppress Poison, where you get to allow your someone that you're using the breakthrough on to ignore the highest stage of a poison that they have. And poisons are horrifically nasty in Starfinder.
afflictions in general are pretty serious stuff in Starfinder.
Yeah, they do not joke around in Star. I honestly think that like afflictions are probably the place in Star, the mechanic in Starfinder that is like just the so. It's harsh, but it's like so good how harsh it is because it really makes you feel like you have this life-threatening affliction. I love it. And so to be able to just turn off the highest like step you're on is great. Like it's really strong. There's nothing like magic can't do that right now. The best you can get is roll a d20 with neutralized poison and hope that you roll high. This is just like, nah, where you're good. Take it down notch, poison. You're one notch, please. And
yes, although it does have a limited duration, and while the poison doesn't progress during that time, it also doesn't count towards the poison's duration.
It's true. It's absolutely true. Hopefully you could drag that person to a medical bay.
And again, that has a very, very strong feel for what happens in genre stories, right? The captain's poisoned. Can you do anything? Okay, I've suppressed it. This is a temporary fix. We need to get back to the ship so we can get back to the medical bay so that we can put him in a back-to-tank, mixing my metaphors, and try and purge this out of the system. We can go on to the next encounter, but we're on the clock here.
Yeah, definitely. But actually, I think the character builder in me is actually most excited about Toxology's inhibitor, because the inhibitors don't have saving throws. You shoot the person and they get the thing unless it specifically says they have a save. And Toxology's inhibitor is you're sickened. So that means there is a world where you can take a biohacker and you can build the biohacker with improved faint and greater faint. So you can faint someone to make them flat-footed until the start of your next turn. Then you could be the wisdom biohacker and take the thing that lets you put extra penalties onto your inhibitor. So you're adding the dazzled condition as well as the... what was the other one that they get? It is the... the shaken condition. And if you don't want to use your inhibitor, there's a feat that whenever you inject someone with something, you can make a free intimidate check against them. So you can be a biohacker who's like, look over there, got you right in the neck. Oh, and now they're demoralized by you and they're sickened and they're flat-footed. And they could be dazzled too if you're using the Spark of Ingenuity ability. And like between all that, you're looking at a -5 penalty to a ton of rolls with a -2 penalty to attack rolls. Like granted that's a once per day trick, but like getting somebody sickened and shaken is a -4, and you could do that all day. Like, you know, just rest for 10 minutes and get all your biohacks back. It's really strong. Granted, like the sickened condition is a poison effect, so it's not going to work against everything. It's got balancing issues. It's not overpowered, but like when you just start racking on those debuffs and you can build the character to do that, it's like, I'm scary. I have your body's chemistry in my hands and I'm just ripping these cells apart one by one. Was that a good impression?
And Alex has gone full med scientist.
Yeah, exactly. All right, I got it.
We have run down most of the things about the biohacker. Do you have any final thoughts you want to offer on it?
It's really good. You should play it. Shivi will love you if you play it because he wants more colleagues.
I don't currently get to play a lot, but that situation may change now that I've moved.
I know. You have so many friends nearby. Not that you didn't have friends before, but now you have like old-time, like long bonded gaming group friends.
There are people, I've moved back to my hometown of Norman, Oklahoma, and there are people here that I've gamed with for 37 years.
I know, and that must be so great. At least from the perspective.
I can see them. I'm currently in quarantine because I moved across the country. So we'll see how that goes. Okay, so that's the biohacker, folks. We've hit the biohacker and the witch warper, and we will presumably, maybe next time, if nothing else comes along, although news could drop, we will eventually talk about the Vanguard.
I think it depends when our show launches, because it should be before Gen Con, which means it should be before Gem. But if for some reason we don't go until after Gem, it might make more sense to review Gem first. But
if Gem comes out before our next show, we'll clearly take a look at Gem.
I feel like it's probably going to be Vanguard and then Gem. But I mean, you know, we play it by ear on No Direction Beyond. So it's good stuff.
Which is another way of saying that we don't plan anything.
Oh, we do.
There are plans. Shout outs for people. And for note, folks, it's my fault we don't plan anything. That's all me. I need to get better at this. So our own Vanessa Hoskins adventure, Starfinder Adventure Path 29, The Cradle Infestation, which is part 5 of the Threefold Conspiracy, comes out on June 24th. I got to write part 2 of that. So, Alex, you're a slacker because you didn't write anything for the Threefold Conspiracy. Everyone else here today wrote something for the Threefold Conspiracy.
Owen, Casey Stevens, I submitted monsters to Threefold Conspiracy.
Fine.
That gets me on a
technicality.
I have 2 monsters in book 4. I have 2 monsters in book 5. And I have 2 monsters in book 6. Unless they changed where those monsters appear in development, which could always happen. Then they could be anywhere. And even I don't know where they're going to be. Ultimate conspiracy.
It's true, folks. As a freelancer, I've got 2 monsters in book... Is it out yet? Okay, I hope I have 2 monsters in book 6. So that's going on.
As far as I know, they could have had
an adventure. I was fortunate enough to get to see some of the outline stuff and some of the other things she's written for it. And this is me clapping. I'm super excited. You are all in so much trouble. That's what's going on with Vanessa. I don't have anything specific I would shout out for. I've got a hashtag that's been blowing up on Twitter and Facebook. If you want to look at hashtag real game industry, that's me being a giant downer, but it's all true. RPG Superstar, it is currently the 10th. RPG Superstar runs through the 12th, so you still have 2 more days, folks, to submit a monster for RPG Superstar. And I have done some of my best monsters in spare time in 2 days or less. So frequently, people's problem is that they are not sure what they want to go with, and they constantly self-edit, and they dither. You don't have time for that anymore, so just let the creativity flow. And if what you come up with is a aged barrel monster that has been turned into an alchemical nightmare by being soaked in bathtub gin by wizard students, which is an idea I just came up with off the top of my head right now, that's the kind of weird creativity that can really get people hooked on your monster. So go write something. This is the biggest set of prizes for RPG Superstar ever, and it's by a stretch. As someone who's been involved by a lot of RPG Superstars, I'm super excited to see this one, and this is one of your best opportunities to break into the industry. So go. It's RPGSuperstar.com. Even if you hadn't heard about it or considered it until this second, go right now and go do it. Alex, you got any shout-outs?
No, I'm just kind of working on my advanced occult guide. The Kickstarter was back in February, and I'm working hard to try to make sure that it comes out for October. That's kind of like my world right now. I'm getting lots of artwork in, and I'm getting a bunch of short stories that I had commissioned by the extremely talented Leanne Merciel. Like, oh, I get these stories and I'm like, critical hit on my heart, Leanne. These are so good. So I'm really excited to be able to finish and share more about it. But that's kind of my world right now.
Fair enough. Okay, folks. Well, I thank you very much for joining us for No Direction Beyond. As always, I'm your host, Owen Casey Stevens. And with me is Alex Agunas, the Everyman Gamer. And behind the scenes, making sure that you can actually see and hear us, is Vanessa Hoskins. I hope you will join us next time for No Direction Beyond.
Go beyond with No Direction.